How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, with two-man coverage of the red and gold, this is the Locked On Chiefs podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome back. It is Thursday, December 15th. We are here looking at this matchup between the Chiefs and the Titans. We're going to take a look about what's been going on statistically. We have Pro Football Focus's senior analyst Mike Renner is going to be with us in a little bit. We're going to do a rundown of where we are with some of these injuries right now. One good thing happened, that Tariq Hill is not injured. He got his second award. He got the AFC Special Teams Player of the Week for that 78-yard kick return, and he is on his way. A lot of nice things were said about Tariq, and he deserves it. He's one of very few people who have won both an offensive player as well as a special teams player of the week in the same year. Really good sign, and look for him to continue. His teammates have faith in him. His coaches have faith in him. He's going to be a factor for a long time. Now, the team got back to work looking towards the Tennessee Titans, and only two players didn't practice for the Chiefs on Wednesday, and that was Derek Johnson, who will be moving to IR. He will not even be able to recover in time to play again this season, so he will be on IR for the season. And there's still some question about what they're going to do with the single slot that the team has in order to pull one guy back from IR. Some conversations about Justin March versus Jamal Charles. Charles is still dealing with some pain. There's no real update on where March is, but it seems like the team is going to hold out for Charles. They did a number of workouts with some linebackers, including James Laurinaitis. But as of this recording Wednesday night, no signing has happened, so there's no new inside linebacker for the Kansas City Chiefs. It'll be interesting to see if they run with Ramik moving over to Derek's spot and then maybe trying to supplement with DJ Alexander in the run game, bringing in Terrence Smith for the passing downs, or going to that three safety look a lot faster. I think you heard Seth and I talking about it yesterday. We both want to see Eric Berry in the box in that safety role. We'll see if that ever happens. But the other guy that didn't practice today is a concern. Philip Gaines, he had a rough game against the Raiders. Saw the emergence of Terrence Mitchell playing more because of that. Nelson had a nice game, but Gaines was struggling. Turns out he's got some more inflammation. His knee is still bothering him, and he's not 100% by a long shot. Even with the extended break after the Thursday night game, Gaines was still not able to practice on Wednesday, which puts him as a big question mark going in this game on Sunday against the Titans. We'll have to look more towards the end of the week to see if he's able to get on the field, but right now it's looking unlikely. So for today, we're going to talk with Mike Renner about a ton of things, a lot of what's been going on with this last 10 quarters of football the Chiefs have played and where that evolution is going. We're going to get to that in just a minute. We want to ask you to go out and listen to the rest of the Locked On Network, like Locked On NFL, Locked On Fantasy. We're all putting out a show for every fan of every team every day, and we're really having a good time with it, and the network's growing. So if you have interest in the Titans or any other team, give that a listen, see what you think.
SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for the football games you want to see up close and in person this season. There's nothing like being in the stadium for the biggest plays of the year, and with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for a great value.
The easiest way to use SeatGeek is on my phone, and it is just smooth as can be. I can get it anywhere, and in just a few taps, instantly find seats to whatever I'm looking to go to. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal. They search all the other ticket sites for you and give you one low price. They want you to get the most bang for their buck. Right now, looking at the Titans coming into Arrowhead, you're not going to believe the deals. There are tickets for less than $20 still available. The best thing about it is all of our listeners get a $20 rebate for their first SeatGeek purchase.
To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app onto your phone. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter promo code LOChiefs and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Go download the SeatGeek app onto your phone and enter promo code LOCHIEFS today.
All right, folks, we are back. We got Mike Renner back from PFF, and he has got all the information that you can't really see when you watch the games, either on the broadcast or even when I'm watching the game film. So, Mike, thanks for coming back.
Nope, thanks for having me, guys.
I really there's a number of topics we're going to cover today, folks, but I really want to look particularly at what's going on with the latest evolution the last couple of weeks, Alex Smith. And I won't just say that it's Alex. I think it has to do with Andy Reid as well, but I want to start with what do you see statistically with his depth of target in particular the last couple of weeks?
It has definitely gotten deeper. I think the first 12 weeks of the season, he was at seven. His average depth of target was 7 yards. That was the second lowest in the whole NFL, only in front of Sam Bradford, who's been not even taking any chances downfield. So 7 yards is very low. Last 2 weeks, he's been at 8.1. That's much closer to the NFL average. That's what guys like Aaron Rodgers are around. He's still a little below average, but that's more you're taking shots downfield and getting that underneath stuff. So he's, well, from what we've seen from him, he's definitely taking more shots. I think that Thursday night game, proved a lot of people wrong that thought, he's just a dink and dunk. He can make those throws down the field. He's not, he's not completely limited. He just doesn't really, just not what he normally has done throughout his career. He's not even taking those chances. So it's good to see him doing it.
Now, I got to ask you a quick question, Mike. Do you think that this is, I don't know how far back you have statistics on Alex Smith specifically, but do you think this is him changing the way he plays, or do you think this is just a couple games where they've decided to go downfield a little bit more?
I think it's not necessarily changing the way he plays. I think it could also be kind of a group effort with Andy Reid in terms of schematically, calling some of those routes. A lot of times they just don't call. A lot of the routes they're calling are underneath stuff, are kind of, short patterns meant to just, improve their down and distance. You kind of have to scheme up guys open down the field. They're not just organically, always in Andy Reid's offense. He's not always, looking for those. So it's a group effort. It's not just Alex Smith. It's some Andy Reid. But, Alex has got to throw those. He oftentimes, like I've said before in this podcast, his eyes will drop far too quickly. And I think there was still some plays over the past 2 weeks that he could have had down the field where his eyes dropped to the check down pretty quickly. But, you're going to live with those with Alex Smith because – you don't want him turning the ball over, and that's what he does. That's what he's done throughout his career, is protect the ball. So you got to live with that, but it's nice to see him taking the shots when they do arise.
Yeah, and the thing that's really stood out to me the last couple of weeks, it's been rising, but this last game against Oakland is his highest yards per completion of the entire season. And I think that has something to do with the speed he has on the outside. And Tariq Hill is obviously a phenom as a rookie in this league, but Chris Conley's got some wheels as well. And I thought this game really illustrated that he can go to either of them. And when you look at, in terms of spreading the ball around, not just the depth of target, but inside the hashes versus out at the boundaries, what does his map look like it's shifting towards?
I'm not sure there's any huge pattern in terms of his passing map, where he's going more towards. I think it's just more encouraging that, those guys are getting open. So Chris Conley's just hasn't been terribly effective over the course of his career. Just him getting open deep on, a one-on-one, that's encouraging. Just the fact that Tyreek Hill is getting more snaps now. I think the first 8 weeks of the season, he didn't get more than 21 snaps in a single game. Every week since then, he's had at least 25. So just getting Tyreek Hill on the field, getting that weapon to, stress the defense down the field, that's helping him as well. So I don't think there's anything sort of conscious Alex Smith looking, outside the hash versus inside the hashes. I think it's just more those guys developing, getting more playing time on the field, more guys just being open there.
Well, and when you talk about Chris Conley, Ryan and I have always said that we like him as a wide receiver. We think he'll be good for Kansas City, and he looked a lot better this year than he did last year. But I think what you're really seeing is over the past couple of weeks, he's really gone away, and I think that's because defenses didn't have to account for Macklin, and they didn't have to account for Tyreek Hill near as much as they have to now. And so I think what you're going to see is Conley's going to be more productive going into the next couple of games with Macklin and Hill, and then not even to mention Kelsey as well. So is that kind of what you're thinking as well?
I think a lot of Conley's, struggle, so to speak, early on in his career have come from basically being somewhat of a poor fit for that offense. He was a coming out of Georgia, I think when I was scouting him, he was a pure deep threat. I think he averaged close to 20 yards per catch. He was a guy that they were targeting way down the field. And all of a sudden he goes to an offense where, you know, you're not being asked to do that same thing. It's going to be kind of, you're going to have those growing pains. So get scheming him more, you know, if taking more chances on him down the field instead of, you know, trying to make him an underneath possession receiver, I think that can only help him as his career goes on.
I think it's really interesting to talk about him because one of his former teammates is kind of in a similar role and ended up, you know, in a much different team that the Chiefs might get to face here in a few weeks. And I want to know, watching film is one thing, watching the games is another. Statistically, when you take a look at these two offenses, do you see major differences, or even better, can you illustrate the differences between what's going on with the Patriots offense in general, who Mal Mitchell's now playing for, versus the Reed offense that Conley's been playing in, and really illustrate the differences in what those schemes are?
I think it's tough to, you know, condense their whole entire scheme into one sort of, you know, one sort of comparison. I could write a whole, you know, book about the differences between their schemes, but I think the big thing that that the Patriots have is guys who are stressing the middle of the field, multiple guys stressing the middle of the field, you know, in a positive manner in terms of, you know, you have Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola, when Rob Gronkowski's healthy, and Martellus Bennett, guys who will get open in the middle of the field consistently. Chiefs really only have one of those guys in Travis Kelce. Whereas Tom Brady can look to three different guys left and right that he thinks he knows will get open, knows will generate that sort of space. Alex Smith doesn't have that sort of luxury. So to me, that's probably the biggest difference in terms of quality of offense. Obviously, Tom Brady, you know, more accurate, more you know, just a better quarterback all around than Alex Smith. That's no breaking news there. But he also has a lot better weapons at this point this season.
Well, and you bring up Tom Brady and the Patriots, and I have to ask you, what are you seeing from them this year? Are they looking as dominating as they have been, as their record suggests?
I think that offense is definitely scary. It's far less scary without Rob Gronkowski. But basically, if they start to get the run game going, if you can't line up and stop that power run game, they're going to, you know, they're going to eviscerate you. Basically what we saw with the Ravens last night, which is scary because the Ravens, you know, one of the top run defenses in the NFL, got ran on pretty well by LeGarrette Blount there. So if they're not going to be able to stop them, not a lot of teams are going to be able to stop them. But if you don't stop that run game, they do a lot of play action stuff off of that. They do a lot of things with their tight ends, with multiple tight ends and their fullback and that sort of stuff. That's just hard to stop. So it starts with stopping their run game, with basically not having to add more guys at the line of scrimmage. If you can do that, you have a chance. But if you can't really stop the run game right now, they just have so many weapons off of that, so many, you know, different counters off of that, that you're basically screwed. And I think that's what we saw Monday night.
I think the defense has been something they've been able to rely on. And if we start looking at them, one thing that I've noticed, especially since the return of Justin Houston, is that the total number of collisions that they're getting, impacts on the quarterback, whether it's sacks or hits. And I can track that fairly well. They had a steeper game against what I think is a really quality offensive line for Oakland. One thing I wanted to ask you is a stat that I know you can track at PFF, but I don't have access to it. And that's quarterback hurries in terms of what they're getting when they're not actually making contact with the quarterback.
Yeah, they're still a little, like I've said before, they don't blitz. They still don't blitz much. They still have not been blitzing much. I think they blitzed a little more against Oakland, I want to say, than their normal average, but they're still well below the NFL average in terms of blitz rate, which if you're not blitzing much, you're still not going to get as much pressure just because you're not going to get free runners and that stuff like that. But in terms of pass rushing grade as a team, which is tracking basically the quality of all your pass rushers, if you're only rushing three and, you know, two guys, you know, beat their defender in a few seconds, it won't look as good as an unblocked man coming on a blitz, but it's more impressive because, you know, two guys are beating a defender. So in terms of pass rushing grade, they're in the top 10. And that's even with, you know, Justin Houston not playing for most of the season. So, and with, you know, Chris Jones also not playing many snaps for a good portion of the season as well. So they're in the top 10 in terms of pass rushing grade as a team. And that's only going to get higher as, you know, you get those sub packages with Holly, Ford, Houston, Jones. That's a pretty scary sub package. So I think as the season wears on, they're going to be able to get pressure at an even more higher rate. They're not even going to need to blitz more as the season wears on.
So you're talking about getting pressure. I have to ask, did Dee Ford's numbers look the same to you as they did before the injury? I mean, to me, it just didn't look like, and I thought he played well. I'm not saying he played bad, but I didn't think he was getting near the pressure that I would expect him to get after the injury than he was before. Is that kind of what you're seeing from the numbers?
Yeah, the last 2 weeks, he's only had three total pressures. Now, his snaps, obviously, way down because you know, Houston coming back. I think he's only rushed the passer 52 times ahead of the last two games. So only three pressures and 52 pass rushing snaps. That's not near what we obviously saw from him earlier in the season or in that middle portion of the season, which, you know, injury is far more effective to these guys than they want to let on to. I think we see it in our grading all the time. Guys with these minor injuries just don't even come close. When they're these high-level elite guys, they can't come close to replacing that production. Those injuries, they do affect you on the field. So I think as the season wears on, though, again, if once he gets back to full strength, we'll see the D4 that we knew there in the middle of the season.
Now, with the pass rush, it's great, but you're looking for some coverage on the backside as well. And I got a couple of things to talk to you about. First of all,
I know where this is going.
We'll get there. First of all, there's a guy that played really well against Oakland that's been kind of back and forth practice squads. He's moved around the league a little bit. And I think he had a fairly good outing. I just don't know if the statistics really bear that out as well. And Terrence Mitchell, who showed up on a number of different plays, how does he look to you guys?
Yeah, Terrence Mitchell, that was my biggest takeaway from this Chiefs game because of, you know, how much maligned that second cornerback position has been. Just really no one, not finding anyone to play high level, you know, play at the cornerback across from Marcus Peters. And Mitchell was, he was fantastic in that game. He only allowed four catches on eight targets for 24 yards. And he was guarding, you know, he was playing right cornerback. So he was guarding Amari Cooper at times. He was guarding Crabtree at times. It wasn't like those guys were avoiding him, basically. So only four catches for 24 yards. And the thing was, I went back and looked. I obviously had not really heard much of him before this. Had not, you know, he only played a handful of snaps the week before, and that was his only experience this season. But last year he played three games for the Cowboys and a handful of games for the Bears and sparingly. But in those three games for the Cowboys, he played about two-thirds of those snaps and was you know, kind of a sub-package guy. But he only gave about 59 yards in those three games, graded out pretty well, had a couple of passes defensed. So, I mean, he graded out well in three games last season. I know it was with Cowboys at the end of the year when they were basically done, but it's kind of encouraging now. He has a 250 or so game sample size with fairly good grades. I'm not going to say that he's going to be the answer for them at cornerback, but it's been very encouraging for what we've seen from him so far.
Still a nice surprise, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, can't really ask for more. You can't really ask for much better play in how many snaps he's played at this point.
Well, and not only that, but the times that he was thrown at. I mean, that pass breakup on fourth down was phenomenal to me. He read the play. And if he can do that, and I'm not saying he's going to do it regularly, and I expect, you know, he's a young guy, he's going to get beat, and that's fine. You know, we have to accept that. But if he can make any of those types of plays on a semi-regular basis for Kansas City, I really have a hard time seeing this pass defense being near as porous as it has been with Philip Gaines. What are you seeing from Steven Nelson? I know he's struggled a little bit more, but he seems to keep making pass breakups at crucial times.
Yeah, Nelson this past weekend, he actually had a pretty good game himself. He benefited from a few drops from his receivers. I think he was the guy in coverage on at least two drops. It may have been three drops. But again, he only allowed four catches himself for 24 yards, had two pass breakups. That's, you know, that's doing a pretty good at the cornerback position. Only 24 yards himself as well. But his grade ended up being around average because of those drops that he that we thought would have probably been should have been catches.
Are you counting the touchdown that was in as a pass breakup or a drop? It was a play where I think Seth Roberts caught the ball in the end zone and Nelson dove on him and knocked the ball out before he had possession.
I think that counted as a pass breakup. Yeah.
Okay. I just was curious because I've seen it counted both ways, so I wasn't sure.
If I'm trying to think of it off the top of my head, I can't picture it, but I don't recall him having a touchdown dropped him, so I think that would go in as pass breakup.
Okay.
We do watch it. We watch like every angle, so someone would know better than me. But I think it did go in as a PBU.
I appreciate that.
Now, the last thing I want to get your opinion on it, and folks, it is his opinion. He does not control everything that comes out of PFF. I'm just warning you now. But there's been a lot of talk online about the supposed Pro Bowl nominees that should be coming out of the AFC. And when you look at that list without Marcus Peters involved in it, what's your takeaway? Do you agree? And if so, what's your thinking behind that?
Tlaib, it was Chris Harris. It was Malcolm, or not Malcolm Mitchell, the Patriots corner.
Malcolm Butler. So I can't argue with Harris and Tlaib. Those guys have been absolutely lights out. Tlaib's playing just ridiculous football at this point. I think he hasn't even allowed 300 yards yet. But then Butler and Peters, that one, there's an argument to be made for both. Peters has given up, I think, more big plays. I think they're close in yards. But Peters said, you know, a few plays that also should have been big plays that were dropped or fell incomplete, like the, you know, the Amari Cooper, maybe it hit the wire, maybe it didn't play from last Thursday night. He's had a few of those over the season, but you can't argue with Marcus Peters's, you know, playmaking ability. Multiple interceptions, 5 interceptions, 10 pass breakups. That's the most. Anyone, any single DB has gotten their hands on the ball this season. So. There's an argument to be made there, depending on which kind of slant you want. Our grading has Malcolm Butler higher, so our grading would suggest that. But in terms of impact in game, interceptions are going to have more impact on a game than, you know, just PD. So you can go. You have the right to be angry about that, I'll say, if you want to be.
Well, PFS doesn't set the Pro Bowl teams, folks, so don't be too upset about it. Just wanted to get it out there in the open. Mike, thanks for being with us again. We always learn something great from you every time you're on. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. It was fun. And I want to say, I said that the Chiefs could win the Super Bowl. I said I think they have a good chance this year. I wrote an article last Thursday in the Washington Post. So if you want to read it, I'm pretty high on the Chiefs after what I've seen these past few weeks.
Yeah, and folks, I retweeted that. That was a great article.
It's on both our timelines somewhere if y'all want to go find it. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
That's it for us today. We'll have plenty more coming as we get ready for the Tennessee Titans. Thanks for listening today, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Chiefs podcast. While you're out there, give us a rating or review, and reach out to us on Twitter at Ryan Tracy NFL and at Chris Clark NFL. We'll talk to you next time.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.